Now, for our next speaker, I'm proud to welcome the chair of our sister organisation in the anti-war movement, Kate Hudson. Kate.
Thank you very much, Andrew, and I'd like to express the thanks of CND to the Stop the War Coalition for organising this extremely important and essential discussion today. It's clearly no coincidence that government ministers are stoking what we believe is a totally artificial wave of anti-Muslim hysteria at this time. At this time when the occupation of Iraq is understood to have been a criminal disaster in which more than 600,000 Iraqis have died. I believe that a key motivation in this is to prevent British Muslims from political participation, to deter them from exercising their democratic rights in their own country. British Muslims have every right to join with the peace movement, the left, and others in demanding an end to this failed war. This anti-Muslim hysteria is a diversion from the real issue. And that angers not only Muslims, but hundreds of millions of people throughout the world. Muslims are not alone in this strong sentiment. Attempts to intimidate Muslims from expressing their views through democratic channels or dressing as they wish attack those rights for all of us. We have no intention of sacrificing rights which took hundreds of years to win, to divert attention from a disastrous war based, as it was, on lies. And over the past few years, we've seen a variety of bogus theories dragged out to give some kind of intellectual gloss to this racism. We've seen the clash of civilizations theory trotted out again. We've seen reactionary attacks on multiculturalism, which Paul talked about. Things like the publication of Londonistan by the so-called journalist Melanie Phillips. All these must be exposed and opposed for what they are, sheer blatant racism designed to divide our communities. But of course, this pattern is not new. It has a long history, in particular from Britain's ruling class. Think of how racist ideologies were developed to justify and excuse slavery. Consider how the notion of the white man's burden, his duty to civilize the rest of the world, was used to justify colonial expansion and imperial exploitation in the 19th century and, of course, beyond. And, of course, that's not so very different from the ideological claptrap we've seen from the Bush administration, the so-called Project for the New American Century, talking about the Americans' responsibility to dominate the world for the benefit of the world. But I can think of no case where the fueling of racism and the scapegoating of communities, however it has been dressed up, is not actually really the cover for the economic and or strategic interests of the perpetrators. Think of a fairly recent example within Europe itself, how in the 1990s the Serbs in Yugoslavia were demonised in the most extreme fashion to facilitate the breakup of that country, and ultimately, of course, to justify the illegal NATO attacks on that country in 1999. And of course, as we now know, not really on the grounds of human rights at all, as they tried to lie at the time, but to secure regime change in what was, in effect, a non-compliant country with US and Western economic and political interests. Now, there are many stark examples linked to British foreign policy over many years. I expect many of you have been, aware of the saturation level of coverage of the 50th anniversary of Suez over the last couple of months, Britain's failed attempts to seize the Suez Canal from Egypt. And I've been quite shocked by footage from the time, the portrayal of Egypt, the portrayal of General Nasser, of the Egyptians, was an absolutely shocking example of the racism that was used at that time to defend such colonial adventures. And of course, looking today at what might be seen as a somewhat parallel situation with regard to Iran, we see attempts to demonise the Iranian people, to demonise their leaders, to soften up Western populations for the prospect of war, which we know is still a real prospect with regard to Iran. So it can be seen as a necessity by the West, where extensive casualties can potentially be justified when those actions are taken. But again, this false portrayal of the Iranians is nothing new. Think back to 1953, when the democratic government of Mossadegh in Iran was overthrown by a CIA coup because Iran had nationalised its oil industry. And of course, Britain had a major role in that coup. They had to turn to the Americans for help because they couldn't manage on their own. But nevertheless, Britain was a key driver within that. And I was recently reading a Working Party report that was written on Iran in the early 1950s. This was an initiative led by Labour Foreign Secretary Herbert Morrison. And he commissioned a paper on the so-called psychology of the Iranians. I just want to read a bit to you because I think it's so clearly an exemplar of what I'm talking about. This report characterised the typical Iranian as motivated by, quotes, an unabashed dishonesty, fatalistic outlook and indifference to suffering. The ordinary Persian is vain, unprincipled, eager to promise what he knows he is incapable or has no intention of performing, wedded to procrastination, lacking in perseverance and energy, but amenable to discipline. Above all, he enjoys intrigue and readily turns to prevarication and dishonesty whenever there is a possibility of personal gain. Although an accomplished liar, he does not expect to be believed. They easily acquire a superficial knowledge of technical subjects, deluding themselves into belief that it is profound. Now, that was the Labour government's characterisation of the Iranian people in 1953. And I would argue that today's rhetoric from our government about values, about Britishness, about the clash of civilizations, is fundamentally no different from the racism and colonialism of 50 years ago, 100 years ago, or many more years ago than that. And we have to unite to defeat that racism.
Thank you very much indeed.